Good afternoon on Alaska. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM, and it's another episode of Happy Healthy on Alaska, a co-production of KUCB and USAFE. I'm going to go ahead and introduce Emlyn Crane, who manages USAFE on Alaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, and Lynn is going to do most of the leading of conversation. So go ahead, Lynn.
Hi, Lauren. Thanks for having us today. And we are here to talk about the impact that the situation with COVID-19 is having on our families and on our mental health. And I'm here with Delta Bedard and Jim McKitis from APIA. Our community has experienced trauma after trauma over the last year. And now, along with the rest of the world, we're dealing with COVID-19, which just feels overwhelming and frightening. What impact does this kind of compounded trauma have on our mental health as individuals and as a community?
Well, you know, the impact it has is the fact that we get to the point where we don't trust life anymore, and that's unfortunate. And, you know, we get a heightened sense of helplessness as a result. And we're not wired to tolerate uncertainty, and we always find comfort in predictability, when right now we don't have that predictability. So learning how to live in these circumstances and how to adopt effective strategies to control our response to these current life circumstances is going to be really important. Developing different ways of looking at things in regards to what's happening. And it's easy to get to that point of catastrophizing, but we can't prevent problems from happening by worrying about them. And what it does is just perpetuates the worry and our nervousness and irritability and a sense of unease. So learning new strategies is going to be really important in regards to how we respond to the stressors that are going on right now.
Well, you know, we need to consider children, both young children and adolescents, and they're going to respond to the stress possibly differently than just the adults. And it's important to have some strategies for parents to or sitters or teachers, whatever, to deal with some of the things we might see in children.
And what kind of strategies do you mean, Jim?
I think it helps adults to know that children might act a little bit differently than what we would expect from adults. And some of that stuff is expected, not to be too surprised, and let the child kind of act out or have some problems a little bit, give them a little bit of room. But also take care of ourselves as parents and teachers and sitters, babysitters, to be able to kind of cope, be able to cope with the changes we'll see in the kids.
Can I add to that one, Lynn? Yeah, so it's not the stresses that we have in our life right now. It's how we assess them and interpret them, but more so how we respond to our given situation. And anxiety being fear-based, it's an emotional response to an anticipated threat. So we're living, sometimes people go to that worst case scenario and try to predict the what ifs and the outcome. And it increases that catastrophizing that I talked about earlier. But we can't prevent these problems. So focusing on the best case scenarios and concentrating on what's meaningful in our life right now is going to be really important. Staying grounded in the here and now and staying present with our family and our friends and letting them know that, talk about the best case scenarios, in other words.
So a lot of people are feeling frightened about their health, about the health of family members who may be far away, also about how long this situation may go on and what impact it will have on our economy and on people's finances. So when we find ourselves having racing thoughts, which I know that happens to me a lot, what are some tools for stopping that sort of cycle and calming ourselves? Can you give us a few tips and tricks for sort of, like you just said, kind of staying in the moment or getting back to being in the moment when our minds are just racing?
You know, I would say contacting people that have that calming effect on you, people that live in those best case scenarios, and talking to them, talking to family members. It's really important. You get on the phone, you talk to your family members, you email people, you text people, stay in contact. Communicating with others is going to be extremely important in regards to our well-being.
I really like that. How about you, Jim?
Well, for some people it'll help if they just get off the social media for a while, stop focusing so much on information about COVID-19 and about all the other things going on, and find other distractions. distractions can be a big help, especially for kids. But that doesn't stop all racing thoughts. Other things, sometimes we just need to get a little bit more grasp or grounded in ourselves to be able to deal with these racing thoughts. Getting good sleep helps. Taking care of our bodies, getting exercise, those will all help kind of reduce these racing thoughts I think you're talking about.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, balancing our media consumption is going to be really important. So constantly watching the TV and the news or even being on Facebook. Facebook has some, there's some negative stuff on Facebook. And then there's a bit of humor on there, too. So, you know, you want to balance that out a little bit. But if you spend your whole day watching TV, that's going to interfere with how you're feeling. It's going to increase your anxiety. I mean, look at the, you know, obviously you want to be well-informed about what's going on. So check the station every now and then and stuff, see what's going on. But do not, I cannot stress enough, turn off the TV. Unless you're going to watch a comedy or something, then that's totally different.
I saw someone suggested, when I was kind of reading in preparation for this, someone suggested don't check the news first thing in the morning. Obviously, we all want to know what's going on, but maybe don't do that first thing. Give yourself a little time or set up a time during the day when you absolutely don't have any media use at all. Give yourself just a mental break from it. So I really like those suggestions. Jim, you touched on this a little bit, but I'm just going to ask a follow-up question. How can parents and other caregivers reassure children that are feeling anxious and restless due to just the general malaise we're all feeling, but also because their routines have been interrupted? They're not in school. They're not seeing their friends. What kind of things can parents say to kids that are helpful and truthful without scaring them?
Well, certainly a lot of us adults are pretty worried about things. Probably not to bring up every little worry that we're thinking of is probably useful. Maybe once a day, kind of go over for 10 minutes on some of the facts, or 5 minutes, it depends what the age of the child is, some of the facts that you've learned over the day or the previous day about what's going on or COVID. Not a whole lot. There's nothing to tell. Depends on the age of the kids. But don't surround them with so much information about this, because it'll confuse them and they wouldn't know up from down after a while. The second thing is, of course, do things with them. Some parents are good at playing with their kids. That'll be very useful, connecting with their kids, playing with them, finding things to do with them that are fun and interesting for both the adults and the children. Going outside is useful. If you haven't done that and you're stuck at home with your children, go outside with them sometimes. Certainly send them outside to do things, but maybe do some things and treat this a little bit like a period of time where families can connect and do a few things outside together. Those are probably the three best things: playing with your kids, talking to them just little bits about just the facts of what's going on, age appropriately, tell them. And the third thing is to kind of find other things to connect with them that everybody enjoys doing.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, I would have to agree with Jim in regards to just trying to find creative things to do with your children. Keep them entertained. And, you know, even doing some homeschooling, like some homework, is going to be a good idea. Keeping them busy with arts and crafts and things like that. One thing I would stress is to be careful that we don't talk about the COVID around the kids all the time, because they're going to get a little bit confused and things like that. So be careful. Be conscientious about what you say around the kids, because that could cause some anxiety.
Right. But one thing I've noticed through social media is that there are a lot of, I know our internet connection is an issue here, but for some people, maybe this is an option. There's a lot of online, like, concerts and plays and all kinds of museum tours and things like that available right now for free online. So that's an idea.
I would sustain regular routines and structure, and, you know, engage in healthy practices, because that's going to bring comfort and stability to the home. You know, so continuing to do things at home that reflects normalcy is going to be really important.
Right. Okay.
That's especially true if you're going to start getting them to do some of the school projects to have some routine every day as to when they're going to do their whatever educational work they're going to do. Otherwise, it'll just be a kind of a chaotic period for everybody for the next month or two.
So how can parents and neighbors support each other when they can't meet face-to-face?
Again, that's where
social media is useful for some things, and that's one thing.
Yeah, I like the idea of phoning your neighbor, texting your neighbor. I saw somewhere where someone had suggested starting like a group text where you're writing a poem or a story and each household adds a word or a sentence. Age appropriate, of course.
I did see that. And you know what? That would be great. That would be awesome for people to connect like that. And one thing I noticed is this community has really connected, strongly connected in light of everything that's going on. I mean, everybody's so supportive of one another, and it's really encouraging for sure.
So then probably some of the usual ideas that we hear for managing stress, like journaling. I like to sing out loud, which is great for my stress level. It's not always great for my coworkers or my spousal unit or my cat, but it gets my endorphins going.
Okay.
Spending time with pets, prayer if you're a person of faith, or meditation. Doing something creative, as you mentioned, online resources for kids and keeping that routine intact, like you both mentioned that. Let's talk a little bit about self-care versus self-soothing. And I know that we've had a lot of talk this year about grief, and I remember saying to someone that I'm one of those people that tends to get down into the self-soothing rather than the self-care, meaning you kind of isolate with your Girl Scout cookies and your bottle of wine and your binge watching, which may be okay for a day or two, but you don't want to live there. So what is the difference between self-care and self-soothing?
Well, the self-care is important because we're always learning how to care for ourselves better as we try to become better people and stronger families and take care of others better and be nicer. Yeah, self-care is important. So this is a good time for work on self-care skills and using the ones that we know work.
Being kind to yourself, being compassionate towards yourself, and taking good care of yourself, where the other one kind of, whether it be overeating or, alcohol or even drugs, I mean, people will venture into that area, and it's not a good thing right now. Because what happens is we start to, again, start to catastrophize. And when we're in an impaired state, we don't see things the way they need to be. You know, and it could cause problems in the home, relational problems, maybe with your spouse or your children or whatever that might look like.
Well, the self-care is important because we're always learning how to care for ourselves better as we try to become better people and stronger families and take care of others better and be nicer. Yeah, self-care is important. So this is a good time for work on self-care skills and using the ones that we know work.
Right, but also, as Delta was saying, maybe avoiding those that maybe feel good and feel familiar but maybe really aren't.
Right. Self-soothing can be unhealthy, but the self-care is what helps us really manage and get through tough times.
One thing I think we all want to make sure people know is that organizations like USAVE and APIA and the city and others are talking about making sure that people who are quarantined or self-isolating for whatever reason will have access to food and other supplies. So I think we just want to get that message out there to reassure people that, we're going to make sure people have what they need. All they need to do is, call USAVE or call APIA and let them know what's going on. Through our partnerships, we can help people get through this unfortunate situation that we're all dealing with. Is there anything else that you wanted to say about the COVID virus and our mental health?
I would, please. It's crucial that we continue to act with charity, compassion, and courage during this time. And remember that we can successfully move forward with love and hope. I want to end it with, after all this is over, what will really matter is how we treated one another. One thing is for sure is that we will definitely better appreciate our schools, our social gatherings, full grocery store shelves, a handshake, and random hugs. when all this is over with, and it will be.
Oh, find good things to do for yourself and your family. I think there's a lot to be said about keeping informed, but I find that I can be informed just fine with 15 minutes, maybe twice a day, reading up on the main websites on these matters. And then for the rest of the time, I try to organize my time with just doing good things, catching up with a few things I want to do, and making good food, you know, because I now have time to make a pretty good dinner, pretty balanced diet. Things are good. And contacting my family and friends and asking them how they're doing, things like that. So a balanced day seems to be helping me a lot.
So we had Delta Bedard and Jim Bakaitis from APIA on the line. And now I wanted to ask a few questions of Link Rain from USAFE. To shift to the domestic violence-related topics, what is the situation likely to make unsafe relationships even more dangerous?
Domestic violence is primarily about power and control. And abusive people are people who use abusive tactics, emotional, psychological, sexual, and physical, to gain and maintain power and control over their partners and other family members. This is a highly stressful situation for everybody. And people who are abusive often escalate their abuse when they're stressed out. Many people living with domestic violence are already isolated. That's a tactic of control that abusers use. So being quarantined or forced to stay home makes them even more so. Being quarantined, forced to stay home from work and other outside activities means that they no longer have those safe times away from their abuser. Some abusers may even use the situation to further abuse their partners by withholding necessities such as hand sanitizer, soap, or medicines, sharing misinformation with their partner to frighten them, to scare them into staying or going, preventing their partner from seeking medical care or seeking out accurate information about what's happening, threatening to kick someone out if they get sick or so that they will get sick. People in these situations may be afraid to leave because they think they'll get sick if they go to a shelter or they'll get sick if they go out in public. They may be unable to leave because of travel restrictions. And all of these things are even more true if you're talking about people who have additional barriers, meaning people who speak English as a second language, people who are immigrants, regardless of their status, people who have disabilities, people with children. I mean, all of these things complicate it. So it's very serious.
And what about kids and elders? Are they at increased risk?
Yes, absolutely, for many of the same reasons. Increased stress, increased economic and housing instability, increased amount of time spent together for parents who are sent home or lose their jobs. Conversely, parents who have to work but don't have the school or PCR to provide de facto child care may be leaving their children alone when maybe their children aren't really old enough to be left alone. Families who are already struggling financially may be afraid of running out of food or diapers. Elders who are living with family that are now isolating, families that are isolating, they're at risk for lots of the same reasons. Increased financial and housing stress, increased isolation, fear, and overwhelming sense of being out of control. Elders who are living alone may feel at risk of running out of food or medication, and their health may suffer due to increased isolation. I think it's important to say that I think our community is developing systems to make sure that our elders are not left without resources. And I think even pets are at higher risk for abuse and neglect at this time. I think we're going to see maybe more animal abuse and neglect, too. None of this is to say that stress is an excuse for abusive behavior, because it's not. We all make choices about our behavior. There is help available. At the very least, there's always someone to talk to. And there are systems in place to ensure that no one in our community runs out of food, diapers, or medication. And we can give those numbers again as we get toward the end of the show.
Yeah, sounds good. And what could I do if I'm worried about a friend?
Well, check in with that person. Let them know you're thinking of them. If you're a parent, I mean, I always feel funny. Well, I like to say that I'm an expert on parenting because I don't have any children, and I know how much people love that. But if you are a parent, set up a check-in system with other parents using phones and social media and other tools. Make it safe and okay without judgment to talk about just how difficult and scary this is, how incredibly stressful it is to be with your kids 24/7 and pledge to be there for each other when your kids are driving you absolutely insane and you feel you're reaching your breaking point, you might lash out. I think we put so much pressure on parents to be perfect and hold them to such an impossibly high standard that I think it's probably hard for parents to say, I'm losing it. And we need to make it okay for them to say that and to tell them that, yes, I've felt the same way too. Learn to recognize the changes in your body when you start to get angry so that you can take a step back. You might start to get hot. You might feel hairs on your neck stand up. Your heart might start to race, or you hear your voice getting louder. When you feel those things happening, you can make sure your children are safe and step away, whatever that means for you, whether that means calling a friend, sticking your head in the shower and running cold water on it, screaming into a pillow, stepping on your porch for some deep breathing, or calling APIA or USAFE. Because I can guarantee you, even though I don't have kids, that there's 100 other parents in town that are feeling the exact same thing.
Yeah, that definitely resonates with me, and I appreciate you saying that just because it's hard and it really intensifies the situation to have the kids 24 hours a day now when we did, you know, we had school before. So,
yeah,
it's been hard.
I can imagine. And it's okay to say that it's hard, and it's hard for everybody. I think people look at each other maybe on the surface and feel like, oh, that person's such a perfect mom or perfect dad, and they're doing everything right. Well, you know what? Even when people are doing everything that they can write, it's still hard. It's still hard. And it's got to be safe to say that.
Yeah. Agreed. And so for people who are living with an abusive partner under quarantine and self-distancing, how would you recommend that they keep themselves safe?
So this is really hard. It's really hard. If you can, maybe set up a signal with a neighbor so that your neighbor knows that if you're lines in the left window on the front of your house are halfway down, there's trouble in the house and they should call for a welfare check. You could establish a safe word with your friends so they know that if you, maybe something like lasagna, so that if you text your friend, oh, I really wish I could make lasagna for dinner, your friend knows that they should call the police because things are getting bad. When you feel violence escalating, try to think about the safest places in your home, which are usually not the kitchen, the bathroom. You can also call USAFE to explore your options. Our shelter is small, so during this pandemic, we're exploring possibilities for alternate housing where people can maintain the physical distancing needed to keep us all safe. But we are still here. If you need to call us, our crisis line is available 24/7, 581-1500. You can call us anytime, whether you just need to talk, whether you're ready to talk about leaving, whatever the issue is. And our services are free and they're confidential.
And in these days when you might be in a small space with another person, it might be worthwhile to also recognize that they could probably email you or reach out through digital communication.
They can email us. Our email address is kind of awkward. It's USA, F as in Frank, V as in Victor, E as in Edward, D as in dog, @arctic.net. You can also send messages to our Facebook page. There's only a couple of us that have access to that. USAFE does not provide batter intervention services, but if you're a person who has used or feels like you could use abuse in your relationship, you can also call if you need somebody to talk to. You can also call USAFE's crisis line at 581-1500. You can call the APIA crisis line at 359-2743. We all do have choices about our behavior. And we can make different choices for ourselves and for the people that we love. Because if anything, if we're learning anything from what's happening right now, it's that we really need to take care of each other. We can get through this together.
Thank you so much to Emlyn Crane from USAFE, Delta Bedard, and Jim Bakaitis from APIA for joining us today on Happy Healthy on Alaska, a co-production of KUCB and USAFE. And thanks to you, Lynn, for putting this together.
Yeah, thanks, Lauren. Stay safe, everybody. Wash your hands. Don't breathe on each other.